This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The phrase no means no has become an integral part of discussions about legal consent for sexual encounters. States like California have decided the no means no standard is too ambiguous, and they've thrown it out for an affirmative consent law. But in North Carolina, no does not always mean no. A 1979 state Supreme Court ruling declared that women cannot legally revoke consent during a sexual encounter. And that means once a woman says yes to sex, she can't later charge her partner with rape, even if she tried to revoke consent or if things turned violent. This decades-old ruling returned to public attention earlier this year when Democratic State Senator Jeff Jackson sponsored legislation to remedy the situation. His bill is currently stalled in the Senate Rules Committee, but it has sparked debate among activists, scholars, and legal professionals. We will be joined later by a lawyer and a legal scholar. But first, I want you to hear the story of Amy Guy. Amy's a resident of Wake County. Her life has been directly affected by the 1979 ruling. We spoke with her a few days ago. As she began our conversation, she began by telling us about an encounter with her estranged husband last December.
I had left in October, and then in December I had a housewarming party, and he had been drinking throughout the day, and he showed up at my apartment drunk that evening. He came in, he was angry, and he insisted I had have sex with him, so I did in order to, I felt like that was a safer thing to do, but in the middle of it, I begged him to stop, and he wouldn't. And so he continued on, and I just felt like, you know, the next day, you know, he was angry and he left, and I, you know, felt like I had been raped. So I filed charges.
And what happened next, and when did you find out about this North Carolina law?
I filed the charges, and the detective did all of his, investigation. And then he was arrested. My estranged husband was arrested on January the 12th. And I didn't find out until it may have been the very end of January, very beginning of February, when the DA brought me in and explained to me that once you have consented to sex, you cannot then change your mind in the state of North Carolina. And I thought, you know, all my life I had been raised that no means no, but apparently that's not the case in North Carolina. So,
what was your reaction when you heard that from the DA?
I guess the best way to put it is I was appalled. You know, I didn't, you feel like as a woman or as a person that has said that you know, in your mind you've been raped, and it was appalling to know that North Carolina doesn't think so, or that for some reason, whomever made up this law decided that that's not the case. And it was devastating.
The charges were lowered. Charges against your estranged husband were lowered. What happened?
Well, they said that the best, you know, basically the best they could do was two counts of assault due to the violence of the act. Because he did, slap me and do things like that while we were having sex. So they said that they could do two counts of assault, and basically that's what he pled to.
And he's now serving a 10-month jail term, right?
That's correct, 300 days. So we got the maximum. It was 150 days for the first assault, and then 150 days for the second assault, and that was the most that he could get.
Obviously, the penalty would have been far more harsh had it been rape, right?
That is my understanding. Without having my attorney here, I can't exactly say what the dates were or what the possibility was. I can't remember, but they've told me before it would have been significantly, you know, higher, possibly, I guess, at least double that, if not, you know, more.
Why did you decide to come forward with your story?
Well, when I found out about it from the ADA, I started to do some research to find out why this law and why it hadn't been changed. And I found out the law was, or it became a law in 1979. And, you know, it's 2017 now, and I wondered why it hadn't been changed. So I did some research and found out that Senate, I think he's a Senator Jackson, had approached the bill in 2015. And had it been changed at that time, then I wouldn't be dealing with this right now. And I didn't want anyone else to have to go through what, you know, I went through 2 years from now, you know, and say, well, if somebody would have just spoken up, then I wouldn't be having to go through this.
Senator Jeff Jackson, who's proposed this law for a couple of years now, it hasn't passed. What's your experience now? You have come forward with your story. What kind of reaction and response have you gotten? You know, what's been your experience since you've come forward?
Well, I've gotten good and bad feedback. You have some people who think that, you know, that you shouldn't, I don't know, you shouldn't say no to your husband, no matter if he's your ex or not. And then you get people who are completely, I've had probably about maybe 10% of those, but more than, you know, 85 to 90% of people agree with what I'm saying, agree that this should not be a law, and it's not a law in any other state. Hmm. So I'm getting a pretty good reaction from most sane people. So
part of the other objection might be, well, if you said yes early on, then you shouldn't have the right to revoke the earlier yes. Have you gotten that kind of a response?
I have from some people. I try to not let that bother me. I just consider that they're ignorant and had never been in this position. You know, it's lucky for them they'd never been in this position. But, I mean, it was a 14-year abusive relationship. So people who've never been in a domestic violence situation don't understand that sometimes you have to say yes to, you know, just about anything to keep from, you know, getting punched, or, you know, you just never know how they're going to react. So people don't understand, you know, people who've never been in a domestic violence situation don't understand that. But people who have, or have seen it or witnessed it in their own family, understand that sometimes you do, you know, say yes to the craziest things because you just, you know, it's no fun to be hit. So,
well, Amy, we do appreciate you talking with us. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
No problem. Thank you.
That was my conversation with Wake County resident Amy Guy. We spoke with her earlier this week. I'm joined now by two guests in the studio to continue this conversation. Carissa Hessick is a criminal law professor at UNC Chapel Hill. Carissa, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Also joining us is Melanie Shakita, an assistant district attorney for Wake County. Hello, Melanie.
Hi, good afternoon.
Let's try to understand a little bit of what's going on here, Carissa. We've been referring to this restriction or this exception as a law. Strictly speaking, it's not a law on the books, right?
Yeah, it's important to remember that when we talk about what the law is in a particular state, that answer to that question depends not only on the laws that are passed by the legislature, what we call statutes, but also on how those statutes have been interpreted by the courts. And so here what we have is a law that was passed by the legislature that didn't say anything about withdrawing consent after it had initially been given, and the state Supreme Court was asked to decide this question, and they did in 1979.
Based on a common law precedent, is that right?
That's right. The common law being basically the set of rules that had been developed over a period of time, including before legislatures wrote most of our criminal laws, things like self-defense and a lot of the other rules that we now have in statutes are originally came about through common law. And so the North Carolina Supreme Court was following the common law rule here.
All right. And this case that we're talking about is the State versus Way. And you may, as shorthand going forward, talk about Way. And when you say that you're referring to this case. But tell us specifically then what it did and the impact it's had.
So what the case did was it said in cases involving rape in North Carolina, if you initially have consent, the fact that consent was later withdrawn doesn't turn what happened into a rape. And I'll add, the Supreme Court in the Way case said all of this without necessarily referencing the specific language that the state legislature had adopted. And so even though there have been some changes to that law over the years, I think the best way to understand the legal landscape right now is that unless the North Carolina legislature acts, this rule continues to be the law in the state.
Well, let's see how it does play out. Melanie Shakita, you're an assistant district attorney in Wake County. Tell us about your first encounter with this.
Well, December will be almost 19 years that I've been at the DA's office. I was in trial in 2009, so I'd been there 10, 11 years, and was in the middle of a rape trial where the victim never claimed that it began consensually, but the defense's argument was, well, even if my client, even if at the end it wasn't consensual, it began consensually. And so the judge looked at the defense attorney and looked at me, and I said, well, Your Honor, no means no. That's the law of the land, and it's what we teach young children, and I'd be happy to get you case law on that. And so he gave us a brief recess, and I went to my computer, and the defense attorney went to his computer, and we both came back with the Way case. The judge, the defense attorney, and myself, we were all shocked that this was actually the law. And again, it kind of goes against common sense. It goes against everything we've been taught. And so the defense attorney argued to the jury, this is the law of the land, and they found him not guilty. And it was devastating for this victim. And it's not something you learn in law school, and it's not something that's widely broadcast. So it's unfortunate as a prosecutor.
Now, when you learned it in the middle of a case, but now you do know. So yes. What impact does that have on you and victims of sexual assault and rape when they come to you?
Specifically, the Guy case, I was doing a presentation to some of my colleagues at the Conference of DAs and said, no means no unless it began as yes. And the prosecutor specifically in the Guy case went flush, and she had no idea, and she had to bring Miss Guyon and have that very, very difficult conversation. And so these cases are difficult to prosecute for a number of reasons. They evolve in secrecy. You know, they're not in public places as a general rule. There often are domestic relationships like was involved in the Guy case. There may be substances that are consumed during the course of the events, which make them difficult. But this just adds one more hurdle. And so law enforcement didn't know it in the Guy case. And so it's really about education, and we're teaching people about the way the law has been interpreted, and it's, I think, a very unfortunate aspect of our law.
What's it like for you now? I don't know how many cases, similar cases, have come to you since, but you know, if I'll ask you to tell me what it's been like for you, or what it would be like to have to tell a victim that, I'm sorry, but in your case, this we may not be able to bring charges.
Well, we do that often. I would say that, you know, even in a perfect world in a case that began consensually and then consent was withdrawn, that's going to be difficult for a prosecutor for several different reasons. But we often have to bring victims in and have that very difficult conversation about, you know, I believe that this happened to you. I have no reason to doubt that it did, but we're not going to be successful. And at least in the Guy case, they were able to resolve it some way that he was at least held a bit accountable, but not, as your earlier piece referenced, the significance that a second-degree rape charge would carry.
So, Carissa, let me ask you about this. We're talking about case law and precedent. Is there another remedy? There's a bill that stalled in the Senate. We'll talk more about that in a minute or two. But can we take this back to the courts and get a review?
So I think that would probably be very difficult to resolve this in the courts and not in the legislature for several reasons, some of which are even more boring than the idea of precedent and the common law. But one of the major reasons that this probably couldn't come back before the courts is that lower courts, trial courts, have to follow the rules set by the North Carolina State Supreme Court. And so if a prosecutor were to try to bring this case before a trial court judge, the trial court judge would have to instruct the jury that they have to acquit if this happens. And frankly, you might even be able to argue that if the prosecutor knew that this was the law and brought these charges anyways, that the prosecutor had acted unethically.
And again, without going into detail, if you could just give me some idea, can a victim, let's say they were told by a DA, and I'm sorry, I can't bring charges in this case, could they then bring a lawsuit and say my civil rights or something has been violated by this interpretation? How would that work, or is that not practical?
I mean, that would be a difficult lawsuit to bring because the lawsuit would essentially have to be against the state Supreme Court, because the argument would be that it's the decision from 1979 that it restricts their rights because it's not the defendant, then it's the law.
And I think the only way that you're going to get it back before an appellate court or the Supreme Court is the state's going to have to survive a motion to dismiss at the end of the state's evidence and telling the judge the jury should make a determination as to whether it began consensually and then consent was withdrawn. Then we would have to get past the hurdle of a jury's verdict of guilty when a defense attorney would get up and say this is the law of the land. So there would be two fairly large obstacles for a prosecutor to overcome for that case to go up on appeal. appeal where it would be directly in front of the justices who could, in fact, do it. Things could align perfectly, but it would be very difficult.
So a more direct route would be a legislative route that
Absolutely.
Simply clarifies this language and remedies the situation. Talk a little bit about the bill that is now before the legislature. It's stalled in committee, but I understand there are even some problems with language in that bill.
So I believe that there are some problems with the language in this bill. I admire Senator Jackson for pursuing this, but I don't think that the bill that he's introduced let me put it this way. I believe that there are many ways to improve the bill that he's introduced. In some ways, the bill goes too far, and in other ways, it doesn't go far enough. I think that it goes too far in that it says that the defendant doesn't have to have known and understood that the victim was withdrawing consent. It just has to have been that the victim was withdrew consent and that a reasonable person would have understood that consent to be withdrawn. That changes what we call the mens rea or the mental state that would be required for the law in a way that I think is problematic. But also to the way this law is written, it would apply only to second-degree rape. It wouldn't apply to other sex crimes like forcible sexual offenses. And given that those laws are written the same way, it's a fix that would only work for some sex crimes and not for others.
Melanie, what for you as a prosecutor, what would help you as a prosecutor? What language would you like to see? Or what kind of a statute would you like to see?
I don't know the perfect statute. Like Carissa said, there are some things that could be fixed. I also second that the statutes, I think most people think rape encompasses lots of different sexual assaults. In North Carolina, rape is vaginal intercourse only. And then there's a whole designation for sex offenses for different types of forcible sexual assaults. I think one of the main issues is I can envision a scenario where a defendant is charged with some other sort of sexual assault separate and apart from rape, and then the defense attorney would make these same arguments. Oh, look, it began consensually, and then that person revoked consent, and look, way should apply here, and trying to ask the courts to extend the law. And so I think in a perfect world, it would be nice to have a statute that would encompass all the sexual assaults. And I understand the concerns, obviously, about the way it's written. And I don't... A legal scholar, I am not. I'm just bound to follow them.
Right. Well, Carissa, what about this? And compared nationally, I mean, obviously, this is the only state that has this exception in its code or somehow governing its legal process. What do other states do, and what would a good bill look like in your mind?
Well, so the interesting thing about this issue is I think that there's only one state where they dealt with this legislatively. Most of the states just haven't dealt with this issue. It just hasn't come up. It hasn't been argued, and they haven't decided it either way, though I suspect they would probably take the opposite approach given where our sensibilities are now on sexual assault and human dignity. But in the states where – in the one state where they wrote a statute, I think that they simply said, you know, consent, you know, can be withdrawn at any time for any reason and sort of dealt with it that way.
But applied it more broadly, not just a second-degree rape, or do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Mm. Well, I want to thank you both for being on the program and sharing these thoughts with us. Carissa Hessick is a criminal law professor at UNC School of Law. Thank you so much for being with us. Also, we were joined by Melanie Shakita, who is an assistant district attorney in Wake County. Melanie, thank you.
Absolutely.
You can find out more about this issue at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, live music with Violet Bell. Stay tuned.